ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corbin Middlemass and Ed Cowan. Four sleeps to go before the Ashes series, but it is the last episode that you will hear from the great Ed Cowan before the first ball is sent down in Perth, and he's coming in hot from the United States in the beautiful state of Texas over in the US. Teddy, lovely to chat with you on this Monday for us, and of course it's still very much an NFL Sunday for you.
Yeah, late Sunday night here, Corb. I've had a big weekend of college football, let me tell you. Good. I did college game day yesterday, and that's my first experience. I had my friend Billy and McKenna. We perched ourselves on the couch and look out. What an experience.
Do you understand? Do you understand it now? Do you get the appeal and the why people like me are so deep in it?
I do. Yeah, I think it's me. I actually feel like I could be Texan in my bones. Like great food, good music, great weather, good people, good people.
Southern hospitality. Yeah.
Yeah, loving it.
The weather in Texas always gets me. Like even I was lucky enough to be there literally a week ago. And having come out of Ohio and even in Oregon where it was raining and it was cold, obviously, in the Northeast, and then to get down to Texas, you think, gee, I understand why people are moving here and want to live in this part of the world. Even then.
Low taxes.
All of that. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Full bit.
Understand the appeal. What stood out? I mean, it was a good day. I mean, Texas got about 8 Division I football teams, but the Aggies, Giggum, Texas A&M.
The Aggies were down by 27 points. I mean, apparently they you know how they love the stats in American football.
Yep.
If a team's down by 27 points in college football since 2004, one team has won, and there's been 248 victories.
Yeah.
And they came back and won. That was huge.
Amazing. Oh, I love that you've got your college football experience. Hopefully you'll be able to keep it up once you come back in Australia and in the middle of the night, and that's where it really tests you.
But I'll rely on you.
But we are here to talk about the most story rivalry in the history of cricket. Of course, the Ashes is around the corner. We led the episode on Friday with the injury concern around two fast bowlers. England told us Mark Wood was going to bowl on day 3 of the tour game. That didn't happen. So despite the fact he's technically been cleared of a hamstring strain, mystery still surrounds him. No such mystery with Josh Hazlewood. After the initial scan cleared him, the follow-up scans have revealed a strain, and as a result, Hazlewood is out. So no Cummins, no Hazlewood for the Australian team for the first test. It opens the door for Brendan Doggett, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, what did you think, Teddy, when you heard the news come through that there'll be no Hazlewood come the first test in Perth?
Oh, dear. That is not good news because, the first thing I do every morning, I open up my little cricket app, see what the scores are overnight. Headline story, Hazlewood. I'm thinking, that makes me look like an idiot. Only 10 hours earlier, I was like, he's a certainty to play. Sure enough, cursed him. And that is not good news for Australia, as you can imagine, I think. And their dominance over the last decade has definitely been based on elite fast bowling and the triumvirate of Hazlewood, Cummins, Stark. And these guys are all Hall of Famers. And I don't know, when was the last time Cummins and Hazlewood didn't play a test together in Australia? You'd probably know the answer for that.
It's happened really only twice in recent times, which was the two Adelaide tests in back-to-back years. Interestingly, the only two tests that Michael Nesis played. So 21-22, it was England and then the West Indies the following year. And one year, the third was Jai Richardson. The other year, it was Boland. And Stark was obviously the consistent that played during that time. But I think in short, it hasn't happened a whole lot, particularly at home in recent times.
Yeah, when you know they've played the fast bowlers. So, I mean, as an Australian fan, this, I'm not going to lie, it's thrown me into a little bit of a tailspin. And if I was the England top order, I'd be thinking, hallelujah, particularly Joe Root. You know, let's just hone in on him for a second. I think, and don't quote me, but this is off the top of my head, I think Hazlewood and Cummins have dismissed him most in test match cricket. And he doesn't line either of them up that well. And so this is their main man and the two guys that have been licking their lips when he walks out to bat in Australia specifically. He ain't there. And so that's going to put a little swagger in his walk out to the middle.
So does it change like fundamentally what you think will happen in the game? Like, are you less optimistic around Australia's chances, obviously, without Hazelwood being there?
I think it just puts more pressure on the batting group. I know that's probably counterintuitive, but I feel like they probably need 50 or 75 more runs. And if the batting is, you know, brittle, or, you know, the conditions that we haven't seen are conducive to fast bowling, they're going to have to find those runs somewhere. So I still think Australia should win the test match, but it's gone from I'm not worried at all to, you know, probably 70-30. How are you emotionally dealing with the news?
Surprisingly, and I was on all weekend, so I was on when the news came through on Saturday. We spent most of Sunday talking about it. I almost feel like I'm one step ahead now. I'm almost excited to see what Brendan Doggett's got, and it doesn't really change my view all that much. Maybe it should change my view a bit more, given the fact how great they have been over a period of time, to think that someone's just going to roll in and all of a sudden try and live up to that. They certainly are going to lose a bit, obviously, without Hazelwood and Cummins being there. But I think it's a great opportunity for Brendan Doggett. It's a great opportunity for Scott Boland. He's going to have to take more of a senior role in the attack rather than being the third guy behind, you know, one of these other Hall of Famers. So, I still don't think it changes what I think is going to happen. I still think the pace and bounce is going to be a challenge for England. But maybe given your reaction, I saw Pete Lawler on Offsiders yesterday. He was a little concerned. I think he called it a disaster. So maybe I'm underplaying it a little bit from where I should be.
Yeah, I think I've just got in my mind the spells that Hazelwood was producing. He had great rhythm. He was in good form. And I was just thinking, he's going to be too good for this mob.
Yeah.
Single-handedly. And so probably of all the three nasty fasties, I was probably most bullish on his contribution. If you said most wickets this series, I was money on the table, Hazelwood.
And we saw,
and maybe that still might be the case, but
he's just relentless. Just changes things. Like, he's just same spot repeatedly, gives you nothing.
You're all in on Doggett?
I think so. I'd be surprised if Nisa comes in from outside the squad at, you know, 35, and we touched on his pace earlier in the summer, and all of a sudden think he's going to leapfrog Doggett and play. So I think, and from all the scouting on Brendan Doggett is, this guy's ready to go. He moves the ball at speed. And I heard Trent Copeland speak to you a couple of weeks ago on this podcast, Teddy, about, you know, takes it away from the right-hander and then brings it back into the right-hander with the old ball, has the ability to do that. But given the fact that England have five of the top seven are right-handers, I think it's what a perfect place for him to debut on a fast, hard, bouncy Perth pitch as someone that can crank it up there and tail it away from the right-hander with his stock ball.
Yeah, I think he'll play. I mean, the only thing to counter that is if Nessa is going to play anywhere, he's going to play where it swings and where his pace actually doesn't count against him. And so, you know, he can kiss the wicket in Perth and swing the ball prodigiously, and, you know, maybe that's effective, and he obviously bats and can field. So I think Doggett will play, but I think they'll have a long conversation about it.
Mm-hmm. Does it make...
I also think it just locks in... It also locks in the question around the specialist opening batter or tour rounders.
Yeah, I was about to ask you that. So that does change your thinking about what happens in up the top of the order?
No, I think they're going to need the batting. So yep. I think Weatherall makes his debut. So when's the last time, the first test? I mean, we talked about this months ago. Like, they've kind of missed their chance to blood some players. There's no chance they'll debut players in the first test. Here we are, two debutants in the biggest series of recent memory. So, due to misfortune, and partly misfortune, partly mismanagement.
I'd have to go back to the scorecards, Teddy, and work out when it happened. First test of a summer, an Ashes series, or whatever it turns out to be. Last time we had two debutants, though, you have to go back to 2019. Do you remember who they were?
What was this, in Australia?
Against Sri Lanka, which was actually the second test series. I think we played four against India and then two against Sri Lanka in February.
Oh, goodness me. No chance. Sunday night in Texas. So my head ain't in that game.
Curtis Patterson was one.
Oh, Monica Rover. I was going to ask for the venue, but that probably would have ruined it. Yeah.
And Jai Richardson was the other one.
Yeah.
So they
would have gone. As soon as you said Monica, I think that would have given away.
Yeah. But that's the last time that we had two debutants. Just on Brendan Doggett, you know I'm a sucker for the human interest story that's always attached to all these guys. And it feels like whenever, and I've mentioned this in the past, whenever someone makes their test debut, and particularly in such a moment like this, everybody's backstory reads like a Hollywood script. It's all, you know, here's this kid who's, you know, mum used to drive him to cricket practice and everything else. Everyone has that kind of a story. I get it. And I'm an absolute sucker for it. But this is a 31-year-old Teddy who won two titles with Queensland. The last ball he bowled for Queensland was to dismiss Josh Hazlewood and win a Shield final for the Bulls, and then made the transition to Adelaide. Obviously won a drought-breaking title last year with South Australia. Took his career-best match figures, 11 wickets in the finals, had a dominant run. But there's been so many moments, as there has in every career, where yeah, he was picked for a squad way back in 2018 when we played Pakistan in the Emirates. Didn't get a look in there. All of a sudden fell back down the pecking order. As I said, had to relocate states in the meantime. Last year, they played an A-series against India. He was an injury replacement. He came in for that unofficial test match, the first-class game, took 6 for 15, recalled into another squad. Again, he's around the group last summer in the Indian series and over for the World Test Championship final, and then grabbed his opportunity when it arose through injury. It was the only reason he got another look in. And now, all of a sudden, he's in this position. He is in line to become the third First Nations cricketer to represent Australia in Test cricket. So he would join Scott Boland, who's also playing in the game, and Jason Gillespie, who'll be in our commentary box. Descendant of the Warramie people, his ancestry around Newcastle in New South Wales, but he was born in Rockhampton. He grew up in Toowoomba. He was playing for Toowoomba Souths until he was in his early 20s, and he bowled to James Hopes in an organised fixture. And Hopes went, gee, this guy's got good pace. Maybe we can do something with him. And that was the first time that he was invited in to a state setup or a higher honours system. So until he was in his early 20s, Teddy, didn't play underage cricket, wasn't state 15, state 17s, anything like that. And this guy who was left school to become a chippy, all of a sudden in his early 20s, makes the progression over the last 10 years to now be a test cricketer for Australia, or potentially on come Friday. So awesome backstory, and I must admit, I'm a bit of a sucker for that. I hope he gets the chance to put the baggy grain on his head come Friday.
Oh, thanks for laying that out. That is awesome. I knew much of that, and I can only imagine, you know, the first time that two First Nations people have played together for Australia in Test cricket. May have happened in ODI cricket before, but that's a great story. It happens a little bit with fast bowling. They develop at different rates, and if you can, you know, not be necessarily broken down at the right time, and you can do your work away from, you know, talent ID programs, it's amazing what, you know, the test of time and endurance and the hardship and everything that he's put into his body away from those high performance programs, probably better for it. And it just shows you the old saying in Australian cricket, you're only five good games away from playing for your state. Well, yeah. I mean, this guy was bowling in club cricket as a 22, 23-year-old, zinging him around, and you know, it was the start of something special. So, brilliant. Love it.
And then there's the Jake Weatherald story. So if he gets a look in, he would be the first born and raised Northern Territory player to represent Australia in Test cricket, which I was surprised we haven't had one previously.
Well, didn't Damien Martin, wasn't he born in Darwin?
So he was born there, but apparently moved as very, very young age. So Jake Weatherall's actually one that's sort of gone through the pathway, played his junior cricket in that part of the world. And again, this is, you know, far from a straight line to all of a sudden be a prodigious talent to represent in Australia. This is a guy that hit 100 in a BBL final, then left South Australia, went to Tassie. In his first year in Tasmania, people forget he only played one game. It wasn't like he rolled up in Tassie and all of a sudden doors opened for him again and he
wanted
took
to
off.
Go home at the end of that season, ask for a transfer.
Yeah, and then ended up staying and then had a 900 run season. He spoke so candidly recently about his struggles with mental health and how basically credits his wife Rachel for her work in this space, and said he had, you know, suicidal thoughts, and basically she encouraged him to go and get further help for that, and then he was able to repair really his mental health, which helped him repair his cricket, and then from there obviously he's able to go on and be in the position that he's in now. So again, a great story of adversity in a different way, as someone that's had to work his way through to be in this position.
Yeah, and a prodigious talent. He hasn't come from nowhere. He was certainly, you know, touted as someone that would always play for Australia, and maybe that pressure weighed on his mind. I remember, you know, playing him many moons ago. He would have been 20 or 21. I think this, oh my God, this guy can bat. Like, just get him in the test team. Put him on the fast track to success. But he'll be better for having to wait. Incredibly proud of the journey he's been on. As you say, Darwin born and raised. Kane Richardson would be another one. You know, they've got a nice little system up there in Darwin. It's a great place to play cricket. And hopefully the first of many Northern Territorians to play Test cricket.
Yeah. So I think we've got the Australian team, or at least we've got a consensus on what we think is going to happen there. Just to drill down on the tourists, I'm keen to get some predictions from you, Teddy, and I'll step you through that in just a moment. We talk a lot about the Baz Ballers. They'd won one of 17 tests before McCullum took over, 25 of 41 since, but they haven't won a banner series against either of their chief rivals in Australia or India. England did take 10 wickets in each of their first 26 innings under McCullum, so they haven't had an issue bowling opposition sides out. I think that's the other thing that's been probably understated a little bit when we talk about the Baz Ballers. They concede more runs per over, but the wickets fall at a faster rate, if that makes sense. So basically, economy rates go up, but strike rates come down. So they are bowling, and their tactics in the field are aggressive, the same way they are when they bat. And so basically, they're willing to leak a few runs if it means they're able to bowl oppositions out. Which sort of gets back to what you were saying at the start, Teddy, where you think both teams are going to take 20 wickets in this match. So then it's going to very much come down to a battle of who's going to get more runs. And you think if England are going to be able to score it at such a rate and bat in the fashion that they do, all of a sudden it opens the door for them against an inexperienced attack.
Yeah, it does. And this is something that's been building for England from a fast bowling unit for some time. So the first thing McCullum did, he said, we're going to pick ultra-attacking batters. And we talk about that a lot. What we haven't focused on is he said, trundlers are out. So don't worry about it. You want to bowl 125, 130 and move them around in county cricket. That's great.
70%, have a great career. 70% of the bowlers in county cricket are gone immediately.
That's right. But we're not interested. You're just not going to play test cricket.
Yep.
It's not the style of play. And he's picked some left field bowlers because of it. And what's happened, they are wicket takers. They bowl good air speed. They do move the ball, but they do leak runs. And they don't set defensive fields. And so there are more chances. They've been catching well. But they've got airspeed. And, you know, probably 3.5 years ago, they said, if we're going to win in Australia, we ain't taking those trundlers. Jimmy Anderson, we saw his record in Australia. Sure, broad even. You got to bowl, you know, high 130s minimum. But you got to be clocking 140 if you want some success down under. So they've worked on that. And you know, it's taken some time to unearth a few players, even, you know, like Cass and the like, people that we haven't seen down here. They get the ball through, don't you worry. And so if the big nasty fasties can stay fit in Wood and Archer, you know, the Aussie batters have got something coming. They're going to have to play well.
Stokes has won the toss and chosen to field 13 times, the most in England Test history. I get the feeling when the coin goes up and comes down on Friday, Teddy, it's not going to be anywhere near the shock as it was when NASA did it back in 2002 and essentially said, oh, we're going to field first. I think everyone will be totally expecting that that happens. England, there's been a lot of talk about how they've tried to sort of evolve their game a little bit in the last couple of years under Brendan McCullum. So I know Michael Vaughan referred to it as Bazball with brains. Their run rate has steadily come down the last 3 years. So 4.87 in 2023. Fast forward 2 years, it's down to 4.35. So it has dropped at least half a run and over during that time, as England are perhaps playing with a little more acumen than they did previously. You're not buying
that. I don't see that, because they've got... Maybe the stats suggest that, but if you look at, you know, Duckett leaves the ball less than any player in the world, let alone opening batter. You've then got Harry Brook. So maybe that's happened because Root has actually been back to scoring good runs and not being... He's probably the one that has adapted his game the most. Remember his arc and journey. World-class player, Baz Ball came along and he was doing some ridiculous things. And it wasn't suiting him, and he went back to just batting properly, probably slightly more aggressive, maybe a half turn. And so, you know, he's been a rock of their batting, and, you know, Ollie Pope as well. But the rest of them, you know, you don't see any signs of them playing with any more or less, sorry, freedom than what they were 3 or 4 years ago.
What happens in the first test?
I think Australia wins by 30 runs.
Oh, okay. So it's a close game.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. I think we're in for a short one, but a thrilling one.
Yep. I can't wait.
Three and a half days. Tea time day four, it's done.
As we get closer and closer, it feels like whatever the result here, I'm not going to be surprised. That I feel like whatever we're chatting about on come next week, that and yet as the game often has the ability to do, Teddy, there'll be something that we're not anticipating. Perhaps if Australia are searching for another opener, there's a guy named Andrew McDonald who opened the batting for the North Geelong Fourths. Did you see this? Put a 100-run partnership on with his son, Ollie. He finished 64 not out. His young bloke got a half century as well, and his team won by 9 wickets. So, coach of the Australian cricket team, spending the last weekend before the Ashes, having a hit for the North Geelong Fourths on the weekend. So, how good's that?
Oh, man. You'd hope that he'd got someone to wang a few in the lead-up. He didn't walk in cold. A few people owe him a couple, you would have thought.
Yep. The forecast, by the way, first 3 days all looks pretty good. 28 degrees Friday, partly cloudy. 27 on Saturday, that's day two. Sunday, a possible shower, but only 1 millimetre, and there's not going to be a whole lot of rain if there is any, but down to 24 degrees come day three. Teddy, yes, jump in.
Corby, can't just make me make a prediction.
Oh, I think Australia win. I think Australia win the first test. I don't think there's going to be too many team totals north of 250. Like, I think this is going to be like a 220 versus 240 versus, you know, 230 versus 170 or something. Like, that's the kind of sense I get to. So, yeah. No, only a couple of special innings. We'll lean on him again from Steve Smith. Maybe he'll be the difference in this match. I've got some comparisons for you, Teddy. So I did this on Summer Grandstand across the weekend with Ben Cameron and Jason Gillespie. What I'll do is I'll go through the two lineups, and I need you to tell me who's got the edge. So who's the stronger in any particular position? So if we start with the opening pair, so let's say Weatherald's going to open with Khawaja. Are you taking the Aussie opening pair, or are you taking Duckett and Crawley?
Oh, goodness me. This is a toss of the coin, Corbin. I mean, so just to let you know where my head's at. I mean, Usman has been a phenomenal player, but the star is fading. Debutant for Australia. Zach Crawley, who knows what we're getting. And Ben Duckett has been one of the world-class players of the last 3 years, but has never, you know, like, his game does not suit hard and fast in Australia. So I'm going to flip the coin, and I think it's landing with England, but it doesn't make me feel great.
Yep. I'll put you down for Crawley and Duckett. As much as everyone gets excited about the first ball of the series too, and it is a great anticipation, I was reminded yesterday by Jake, a good mate of mine, who basically said, does everyone remember the first ball of the last Ashes series? As much as we talk about Harmison and the Stark wicket all those years ago and everything else, Crawley laced it through a cover for four. Like, and we thought, oh, here we go. The Baz ballers living up.
On the up. Yes. It wasn't a long half volley. It was like fourth stump.
Yeah. With deep point out and
just bail high, and it just disappeared. It.
And we thought, oh, this is going to be a tone setter for the series. And sure enough, I think Australia retained the Ashes. What haven't they just about the end of Lords or the end of the third test? All right, so I've got you down for Crawley and Duckett in the opening position. Ollie Pope.
Easy. Minus. Next.
Oh, minus. Hey, what about
Ollie Pope? He ain't lasting the series. Who's next?
What about Ollie? Just a little spotlight here. Ollie Pope's lead up. So he got 100 and got 90 in the second dig in this Lions game, which I know you don't put a whole lot of importance on.
Nope.
No. One thing I did like about that knock in particular. So he was sitting there waiting to bat. Crawley and Duckett smacked him around. None for 182. They lost 3 for 3. So he's walked out to bat at first drop. Both the openers have gone. Root's come and gone. And while all that carnage is happening around him, he's been able to peel off a few. Got his 100. All he could possibly do out of this game, by the way. Everyone will say, oh, it's only a warm-up game. He's playing against friends and everything else. Well, all he could do is go out there and get runs. He's probably the one guy on the team who's under the most amount of pressure. He's playing against Jacob Bethel, who's the guy who's, you know, seemingly the second coming, depending on who you believe in English cricket. And all of a sudden puts his head down, gets some runs. So I feel like for Ollie's sake, that's all he could do. And yet
You love him. You are the greatest Ollie Pope apologist there is in Australia, I would have thought.
But I'm probably with you. I think Marnus Labuschagne gets the nod there, and he's in just about career best form.
What was your opening combination? You know, you can't squirm your way out of this game.
Crawley and Duckett. And Duckett. Joe Root or Steve Smith?
Absolute no-brainer here, folks. Steve Smith. So, I mean, Joe Root makes my combined 11, but he doesn't get to bat at four on a head-to-head basis, does he?
No. No, I'm with you there as well. Feels like Steve Smith's absolutely prime, by the way. Like that Shield game, half centuries in both innings on a tricky wicket, and all the focus on Joe Root. What did you think about him getting a little send-off after getting out early in the first innings in that Lilac Hill game?
I was watching highlights of the England trial game at Lilac Hill, big man.
I can't believe that you possibly wouldn't. I think I've actually got the audio here for you. Here we go. This is how it sounded when Joe Root was out for one at Lilac Hill. It's going to be a long summer on your bike.
I thought you were talking about sent off from the bowler, not the crowd driving past. Sorry. To be expected. Long summer, Joe.
All the locals out there at Lilac Hill watching the warm-up game. All right, number five's fascinating. You've got Travis Head, who's got one score over 40 in his last 20 hits, or Harry Brook, who's never scored a run on these shores. I think if you extend that all the way through to his Big Bash performances and everything else, Brook or Head?
Oh, this is a tricky one as well, because I am a Harry Brook fan. Mm-hmm. Travis Head in form is my favourite player in the world. I think Brook's in for a big summer, and we'll see Travis Head break the shackles a little bit. He's been saving his runs for the Test Series, so I'm going to say Travis Head, but again, I mean, England need Harry Brook. Without Harry Brook runs, they're toast.
I think Travis Head too. I'm not all that bullish about Harry Brook's chances down here, having heard you and Copes pick it apart a few weeks ago about what your plans would be to him and just bowl a disciplined sixth stump line. Some great nerdy cricket chat if you missed that episode a couple of weeks ago. We had Ryan Harris on Summer Grandstand on the weekend, and I asked him about Travis Head, obviously having spent some time with him. Here's what Ryan Harris had to say.
He's definitely aware of that. I can tell you that. He doesn't like failing. And, you know, he has played a lot of white ball cricket. I'd love to have had him, probably one more game of Shield cricket. But obviously the schedules didn't allow. But as I said, he's aware of that. He's been down here. He's worked with our batting coaches. I think he's one of the better ones going around. Stephen Stubbins down here. He's spent a bit of time with him over the last sort of week. Just trying to finalise and work out a couple of things and, you know, to nut out a couple of things. And as Stephen said, he's hitting the ball really well and he's getting into really good positions. So Travis can flick the switch. He can go from, you know, not scoring many as he has done to, you know, to make 150 just like that. That's the way he works. So I know he stands up in big series. There's obviously a good challenge coming up against the potential pace of England, and he's already spoke about that in Hobart this week, that he's looking forward to that. So, no doubt that he's obviously needs to get some runs, and I'll back him in to do that over the next couple of weeks.
So, you know, the pace and bounce suits Travis Head. He can play his shots with freedom. Tell you what, I hope he's been practicing. Armpit ball. Ooh. They ain't giving him any width. They are coming either over the wicket, wide of the crease, in at the armpit with a leg gully or a leg slip, or around the wicket with two back and coming at him. They are not going, because off stump is fourth stump for everyone else. They are not going to give him a millimeter of width, and if they do, look out. But if they've been doing their work, his armpit is in for a working out.
Doesn't play a lot of hook shots, does he? Plays a lot of pull shots. Nope. Doesn't play a lot of hook shots off the top of the badge. It's interesting to hear Ryan Harris say, look, I would have liked to have him for one more game. Ben asked him a follow-up after that, and he basically said, yeah, look, I think he'd be better off having two red ball hits as opposed to one. I know you were calling for it, Teddy, on this podcast, that maybe he's one or two hits short against the red ball leading into the series. The all-rounder position, this is a fascinating one. Cam Green, perhaps the fastest rising star in world cricket, up against Ben Stokes, a man who's done it before in Ashes cricket. Where are you leaning here?
I'm taking Cameron Green.
Oh.
I think Stokes is just slowly on the decline. And I don't think he's seeing out the whole series.
Okay.
If his bowling loads are up, his body ain't getting through the series.
Smith. So, yep. Jamie Smith or Alex Carey?
Carey.
Carey. You're next. A big Carey
Smith,
fan.
Good player. Don't make no mistake there. But, I mean, Alex Carey, I think he could well be the most valuable player of the series. If Australia win, look no further than probably someone like an Alex Carey to get it done.
Given England aren't going to play a spinner, I'll just do the quartets as a group. So Archer, Wood, Cass, Atkinson, who we think is going to be the four for England, up against Stark, Doggett, Boland, Lyon.
I think England have probably got it covered.
Okay. All right, I'll put you through for that. Do you think Wood will play, even though he's only bowled eight overs and hasn't played fixture?
How would I know?
You're out after of form too on
my
this.
My absolute doozy on Friday. You're looking at me like I'm the bloody team doctor. I've got no idea.
Who gets the new ball, Doggett or Boland?
No, Scotty, take the cherry, son.
I like it.
Don't you worry.
All right, leading wicket taker in the series.
Josh Hazlewood.
Still?
Yep. Four tests.
I admire your loyalty.
Well, no one else. So the only other people that are playing five tests is probably Nathan Lyon. So, and he ain't taking the most. I think, maybe.
Put me down for Stark. That's a bit boring.
Okay. But yeah, I'm taking Josh Hazlewood. It's a punt. It's long odds at the moment. Don't worry.
It is. You're a bit more daring than I am. Leading run scorer.
Hang on. Whoa, big guy. How about you?
I said Starkey. I said put me down for Starkey.
Oh, sorry, I missed that. I thought you said Starkey. That's a bit boring.
No. Yeah, it is. It's probably the favoured way, given the fact that Cummins and Hazlewood are hurt and Australia are the favourites. But I'll take Mitchell Stark. Leading run scorer?
Smith.
Yeah.
Of the Steve variety.
Yep. On with Smith. Smith too. The other one's Marnie. I think Marnie's in for a big summer. I think he can continue his run scoring ways. So,
If Marnie gets 400 runs plus, Australia win 4-0.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he will?
He's a key player. I think Smith's in for a red-hot summer. Labuschagne and Carey with the bat. They're my three trump cards.
Series scoreline?
3-1, still sticking.
Yeah, I'm 3-1 as well. With a washout, where?
It feels a bit vanilla, but I'm not. Oh, it just feels right.
Brisbane rain?
Hope not. Going up for the test match.
Yeah, I don't like that it's a thunderstorm season and the game's a day-nighter. It feels like you can set your watch in Brisbane at about 5:30 every day in storm season. They roll through. Problem being a day-night test, going to be the middle of the day. All right, here's a couple of over-unders for you. Over-under in the series. Will Joe Root score over or under 1.5 hundreds?
That's a ridiculous way of putting it. So what you're trying to say is, does he get one or two? I think he gets a maximum of one, and so I'm taking the unders.
Yeah, I'm with you too on the unders there. Harry Brook, over or under an average of 30 for the series?
No. I'm way overs. Give me another line on that. I'll give you another line. Have another crack.
35.
Overs.
I'm unders.
We'll play 35.
We'll play
35. I'm overs.
This is our next veggie curry deal. What, 35?
Mm-hmm. I'll give you the extra five, and you can throw a little,
average of 35.
Delicious mango lassi in there as well.
I'm taking the unders. I'll give you anything over an average of 35 for the series for Harry Brook. I don't think he's going to have a great series.
Clearly. You just gave me 30. I've given you five extras.
Will Pat Cummins play more or less than two test matches?
He's not playing more. And he won't play less. Can he just play two?
This is why we have the halves. This is why we do 2.5. Because you have to split them. Over or under 2.5?
No, under, he's not playing more. Under. It's under.
Okay. Yeah. Will Usman Khawaja play over or under 4.5 test matches? So if you take the overs, he's playing all five. If you take the unders, he's missing at least one.
I get it. I think he's playing five.
Okay. You're taking the overs there. I thought you would have taken the unders there because it also accounts for form. It also accounts for the fact that he's old, and if he gets hurt at some stage, there's
chance he misses Australia one. Australia are winning at 3-0. It's like you can ride off into the sunset, fella.
Yeah. The only way he doesn't play is if he misses out and the team's down, headed to Boxing Day.
That's bad news for everyone.
You ain't lying.
That's, yeah. We need more than vegetable curry in that situation.
Yep, I'm with you. Speaking of veggie curries, we've got a live show which is coming up on day 6. It's amazing. Teddy's in Dallas. He's still got to go to Nevada, and then somehow he's going to be back for this, which I promise is coming up day 6 of the test match. So looking forward to that. We are in Sydney at the Olympic Hotel.
Olympic Hotel.
Can't wait. So if you haven't got a ticket to come along and see us, the good news is it's a live record. So you'll have the opportunity to hear everything that we're talking about in the room. We'll take some questions from the floor, and Teddy will answer all your queries as they come through. Did you watch the India-South Africa test match, or did you see any of this from Kolkata at Eden Gardens in between 9 games of college football?
I didn't. I saw the scorecard only. Yeah, I'm happy to listen here.
One, awesome to see cricket back at Eden Gardens. I know there was a whole lot of consternation about the pitch, and Harbhajan saying it made a mockery of Test cricket, and Michael Vaughan said it was an awful pitch. As debate raged about that incredible match where South Africa were 30 behind on the first innings, won the Test by 30 runs. So India set a target of 124 and were bowled out for just 93. And it's the first win that the Proteas have had in India in 15 years. Simon Harmer was all of a sudden looking like a Neil Kumbhle as he picked up 8 wickets for the match. You're a Simon Harmer fan?
Yeah, he's a good bowler.
Okay.
I mean, he's tall, he spins it. He's been working the professional cricket circuit for a decade. County cricket at Essex, he was the best and has come back to South Africa to play test cricket. In those conditions, he'd be a real handful.
So 1-0 up in the best of 2 series. Guwahati is the venue for the second test, which starts on Saturday.
I've been saying it for a while, Corb, is the worse the wicket in India, the more chance India are to lose. They're actually not great players of big turning wickets anymore. They used to be when the game was a little bit more defensive and because they're not the wickets they get in first class cricket. So they don't play on those wickets that much anyway. They play about as much on wickets that turn prodigiously as the visiting team. So they've got no clue when it's turning like that.
It's the same way here, isn't it? Like when we have a big green. Same. Remember that green monster they had at the Gabba a couple of years ago, and it was a 2-day test match or whatever. As you always say, it does bring the team with the less level or the lowest skill base certainly into the match. Felt to me Shubman Gill's absence was the turning point in the test match. And I know a lot of people think, oh, he's one guy, there's all the rest of it. They were 2 for 79 in the first innings when he had the neck spasms. Ended up getting stretchered into an ambulance and off to hospital, where he still is by the last report. So hopefully that isn't as serious as it certainly sounds for Shubman. In reply of 159, so essentially they were 80 runs away with 8 wickets in hand. They ended up losing their last 16, effectively 18 wickets in the test match, for 200 runs. So it changed dramatically when Shubman had that neck complaint, and really there was no resistance. And I think as much as anything, you lose arguably the guy who's been their best batsman, certainly in test cricket this year, on top of the fact there's no Virat, there's no Rohit, and whatever maybe they don't give you the production at this stage of their career, but they're calming figures in the dressing room and senior players that I actually thought that storyline was a little bit undersold in retrospect, that, the captain disappears and you're basically taking 3 senior guys out of this team in a short period of time, and they folded like a cheap tent without them.
Cheap tent. Very good. Yeah, I mean, that's... You're right, and we're talking about an inexperienced batting lineup in foreign conditions, essentially. So if they're serious about a big one-all scoreline in the big 2-test series against the world champs, then they'll probably go back to a flatter wicket that deteriorates over 5 days, because they'll bat them out of the game.
Yeah, yep. Guwahati is that venue, which never hosted Test cricket before. So
I don't even know where that is.
No, neither.
Excuse my ignorance.
So we'll see what we get there.
So that's the 15th Test venue that India has then on rotation.
Yep. It's what a combination too. 2 Tests in the series. You got the most storied venue that we haven't seen a Test at since 2019, and then we're unveiling a new one for the second Test. I spoke about all the drama when it came to the pitch and the backlash, particularly from former players and greats of the game. The Cricket Association of Bengal president is a guy named Sourav Ganguly. You may have heard of him, former captain of India. He was quoted, and it was a fascinating quote following the game. So basically, he had to come out and defend Eden Gardens and the pitch. This is what he had to say. The pitch is what the Indian camp wanted. This is what happens when you don't water the pitch for 4 days and that the curator can't be blamed. So for Ganguly to essentially come out and say, hey, this is on the home team, as much as you want to sit here and say, hey, our venue wasn't up to snuff, that's what they wanted, this is what they got, and this is the outcome as a result. And Gautam Gambhir, the coach of India, in the aftermath said it wasn't an unplayable wicket. So he basically said, look, it was just our execution, we're to blame. Put it on his own group rather than saying, that the pitch wasn't appropriate. So both the president of the association basically saying, hey, it's not our fault, and India saying, no problems there from the grounds front.
I mean, make no mistake, those orders happen over there. Mm-hmm. And people probably think that they happen everywhere around the world, but it's not the case.
Does it happen the same way here?
No.
Yeah. Well, I was about to say, New South Wales cricket can't tell the SCG Trust what they want the pitch to look like. I don't know how the Australian team or any other party's going to come in.
That's exactly right.
The Sheffield Shield setup. The last time we spoke, the WA Queensland game was coming to its conclusion. You confidently predicted WA was going to win.
I got this one, Corb.
Yep, a one wicket win for WA. Wasn't looking so sure about 21 runs needed to victory, 9 down. Queensland closing in, and then Corey Roccacioli, 24 not out after picking up a boatload of wickets with the ball. He got them home with the bat. So after declaring 68 runs behind, fortune favours the brave, and the old Western Warriors get it done late on day 4.
The Western Warriors. I mean, great. This was a game for the purists. I mean, late on day 4, 9 down. That's an absolute classic. Cricket Australia have been counting down their top 25 Shield games of the last 20 years on the Cricket Australia app. This might need a little re-judgment. This was a cracker. 21 to get. Roccacioli, bowled beautifully. Got them back in the game. The game was drifting for WA. Got them back in the game from around the wicket to the right-handers. Had a couple caught in slip. And then, we've seen him bat. He scored some valuable runs, but under the pressure of trying to win a game. We saw him almost do it in Tasmania, I think the week before. Yeah. Missed out. So some kind of penance for him. He's a good cricketer. I like the look of him. And WA, more to the point, it speaks to a team that believes that they can win. To declare 60 behind doesn't happen as much these days as it should. Just a great game of Shield cricket.
So Victoria's out on top with 4 wins from 4 starts. They're 4 and zip. And then every other team, Teddy, is either sort of 1 win, 2 draws or 1 win, 1 draw. So that it is absolutely bunched together, 2nd through to 6th on the table. New round of Shield cricket starts on day 2 of the test. So that's Saturday. New South Wales playing Tasmania at Cricket Central. Queensland and Victoria at the Gabba, and then South Australia and WA at Adelaide Oval. There is still another round after that before the Big Bash begins, so 2 full rounds to go before we get to the Big Bash break. And as you touched on, a couple of thrilling results already this year in the Shield, both involving WA, that narrow loss to Tasmania, all 4 results possible late in the piece, and same again here out west, this time WA on the right side of it against Queensland. What about Kingston Twin Ovals? What are your memories of playing there? And do you ever play much club cricket in Tassie, running around at Kingston Twin Ovals, which is now a domestic ground?
Played a game there, got 100 against Scotland in a warm-up before their World Cup game, actually. I remember it fondly.
have some of that in Scotland.
Yeah, exactly. Eat that, Corb. It's pretty good place to play cricket. It's beautiful, but
was it hosting domestic cricket? Yeah,
it felt a little bit clubby when I was watching the highlights and the cars in the background honking their horns when a wicket fell. It felt a little bit country football.
Yep. Yeah, I'm not sure why the game was there. Tasmania by 4 wickets. They ran down 197. So Tassie, they're flying in the one-day competition. They're 5 and zip on top of the table. Earlier, Nathan McSweeney made 49. Bo Webster got 78 in the chase. So that's good for him on the eve of the Perth test, albeit he's looking as if he's going to be the unlucky one to miss out. Jake Fraser-McGurk only got 4 opening the batting. He faced about 15 balls, I think, before he eventually got out. We asked Ryan Harris about him as well and where his cricket's at. He said he keeps telling me, so saying in my conversations with Jake, he keeps telling me he wants to be a red ball cricketer. Basically, the experiment for him being an opener in the red ball game is over. So the next time he'll come back into the Shield team will be as a middle order player. We're going to see him in a CA11 game along with Jai Richardson. They take on the England Lions, and that runs, again, in line with the Test match. So he won't play for South Australia in the next game because he'll be playing that rep fixture, which has a whole lot of players from various walks of life in Australian cricket. Some guys in development mode, some guys that are on the fringe of playing for their state, other guys, like in Richardson's case, who are coming back from injury. So not only a full round of Shield fixtures, but then also that fourth game involving the CA11 up against the England Lions.
Yeah, I don't hold high hopes for his four-day cricket, but we'll see.
Just on the CA11, by the way, do you know who came through the CA11? Brendan Doggett.
Yeah, so, I was about to say. You didn't even let me respond. You were too quick on the trigger.
So that makes it Doggett, Short, Inglis, Bartlett, all to represent Australia out of that CA11, which I know you're a big fan of, Teddy, back in the sort of 2016, 2017. Jason Sanger.
At the time, I wasn't. Yes. But in hindsight, I've been proven incorrect.
Yep.
But, I mean, I think one-day cricket now, you know, the domestic summer is kind of pointless, so we might as well experiment a little bit.
Put it on life support. Time to bring it back?
Well, why not?
CA11.
Absolutely.
WBBL needs no life support. That is flying as the premier women's cricket domestic competition going around in the T20 format. All eight teams in action across the weekend. Renegades too good for the Stars by 4 wickets. Tess Flintoff hitting the winning runs against her old team. Scorchers beat the Strikers in a rain-affected game, so big win there for Perth. And the Saturday doubleheader, the Hurricanes were too good for the Heat. I think you and I are both big fans of the group that the Hurricanes have put together. But the talking point comes out of the Sydney Derby on Saturday night, where the Sixers beat the Thunder by 24 runs. And Kiva Bray got a hat-trick she didn't even know about, Teddy, across two different overs.
The youngest hat-trick taker in WBBL history? Has to be at 16.
Has to be. So last year she set the record as the youngest player in the WBBL at 15. Now at 16, she's already represented Australia at under-19s level. Also a talented goalkeeper in association football.
I was about to say, we're glad we kept her in the sport because she was on track to play, you know, Matilda-level soccer. Yeah.
So she's represented the young Matildas. Drawn comparisons too, given the fact she played for the young Matildas. She bowls right-arm medium. She's also a right-hand batter and an all-rounder. The next Elise Perry.
That one called Elise Perry. Oh, yeah. I mean, still one of the great World Cup goals. Top corner. Yeah. My goodness.
Elite. So good luck to
Kiva. I thought you were
going to
talk about Meg Lanning just absolutely creaming the ball to all parts of the field. 90-odd off, I don't know, was it 50?
Yep.
Great. I mean, that's a delight to watch. When Meg Lanning's in full flow, we obviously don't get to see it in international cricket anymore, but she looks happy and content and just doing a thing.
I'm with you. Absolutely. That was pretty cool back on Friday with the Stars having a big win in that fixture. So Hurricanes only undefeated team. Then we got the Renegades 3-1, Sixers 2-1, Scorchers 2-2, and then 1-1-1. One win, one loss, and one no result for the Strikers and the Stars. And then the Thunder and the Heat just propping up the table. They're yet to win through their first three starts. And the Heat have been a dominant team in recent times, of course. Final last year, won it the year before that. So that they are yet to open their account as we record this right now. There's also another quirky little incident that happened in the WBBL on Saturday night. I'll just play you this little piece of audio before we get out of here, which is something you don't see every day, particularly in high-level organised cricket.
There's a discussion here with the umpies. I wonder what's... Oh, my gosh.
I think I'm confused with batters facing
the wrong.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I know
you
just come out under 12s, but you're meant to stay at that end.
The voice of Elisa Healy, who was absolutely slapped down.
Oh, my gosh. When you hit a boundary, you're supposed to stay at the one end.
So Finnis hit a boundary off the last ball, and then she'd gone to the other end.
Well, that's what they're saying. The wrong person was on strike. Have you ever seen this in cricket?
No.
I told you it was bizarre. What do you do?
I don't know. I think you're going to have to re-bowl the ball.
Dead ball.
Dead ball. I think that's the right call.
Robin Chipperfield and Michelle Gosco on the ABC call. Alyssa Healy there through the stump mic. So last ball of the oval over, boundary hit. And the woman that hit the boundary walked to the other end, faced the first ball of the next over. They go to bowl the second ball, Teddy. They realise, actually, you're not meant to be on strike. So everything that's just happened, we've got to scratch that and do it all again.
So they called it dead ball.
Yep.
I've never seen the ball. I mean, players try it the whole time. Not the whole time. That's silly. But more often than you think, they'll try and, you know, play a little trick on the umps. But the umps, you don't fall for that one.
No.
But they did.
They did. They got one ball in and then able to redo it, and off they went. Don't forget the WBBL coverage available through the ABC Listen app, where you can also find coverage of the first test, which all begins on Friday. Cannot wait, Teddy. Looking forward to seeing you in person at the completion of it. I'm sure we'll chat at some stage before then. When I mean some stage, I mean this podcast is dropping after every day's play. So end of day one, end of day two, end of day three. The only thing is day one, Teddy, you'll be at 30,000 feet. So I'll be there with Copes.
Call me.
Trent Copeland's going to help us out, and then I'll chat to you at the end of day two. And then we would have spoken many times before I see you in person in Sydney on whatever day six is, Wednesday.
Have a great call, Corb. I'll be thinking of you.
Thanks, Teddy. Enjoy. Safe travels home from the States. Thanks to Josh and also to Fletch. We're out. The ABC Cricket Podcast, available twice weekly, Monday and Friday, and of course at the end of every day's play, right throughout the Ashes series. We'll chat to you soon.
Later.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.